Hey everybody, how's it going? Yep, welcome to another episode here at Keith Space. I don't even know what it's called.
Hey guys, Jesse here to share with you your call to action, encourage and inspire you on your business journey. So let's get to it.
Hey guys, what's up? Welcome to another episode here with Charlotte at Your Call to Action. Let's get this on. So thanks for coming. Sorry, did I just jump into that a bit fast?
No, it's okay.
So welcome to coming on to the show. It's good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So for those who don't know about you right now, like, just share a bit about yourself. What do you do? Who you are? Yes.
So Charlotte or Charlie. I'm a graphic designer and actually working as a creative director for Concepton. That's a branding company here in Perth.
So I'm curious because we've done an event together where you spoke amazingly over design and branding. So, but just I'm really curious to know your story about who you are and what's brought you to the stage in life. So, let's go back in time a little bit.
So how far in time?
Well, I don't know. Like, what made you start to get into it? What gave you the inspiration to begin doing your own business? Like, when did that journey begin? Let's go back that far.
I think it's just that I really struggle to find like a company where I can fully express myself, and that's, I don't know, I just find, whether it was small companies, freelancing, or big companies, I find them really stuck in their own process. And the thing is, like, now we're living with the internet era. We need to be flexible. We need to bounce. We need to be super reactive. And the things change like this. And I find that most companies, they're really stuck. Once they find a formula, they just stick to this and they don't change.
So how many businesses did you go through? And what was, maybe, I don't know, when was your first role? Because in your studies and then after your studies, what was the first couple of roles you were doing that made you recognize this trend?
But like I started like working in marketing.
What
year? And maybe to, like, I came in Australia in 2013. I started with a bunch of internship in design and marketing, and after I got my first job as a marketing manager. And I guess
what- You went straight into marketing manager, your first job?
Yeah.
What the hell? Get the tools. I'm going straight to telling people what to do.
I did a lot of like internships. I found like a couple of really cool internships with really big companies. Mm-hmm. So obviously it was unpaid job, but it looks really good on the resume because it was with well-known companies.
Back in France?
No, in Sydney. I actually never worked in France.
Oh, okay.
Like nice. I came in Australia the last year of my master's degree to do my internship here, and I never left.
Wow.
So, except my like summer job when I was a student, but otherwise I actually never worked in France.
Ah, interesting.
I worked in Australia to develop like the French market for a company based in Sydney.
I see. Yeah. And that was the intern roles you were doing there?
No, that was when I was marketing manager.
Oh,
and
okay.
I guess like what I found the most frustrating is that, because obviously I had some experience as a graphic designer, and I find it extremely frustrating how marketers, they have no idea about graphic design. And I think that it's, when I was saying like people are so stuck in their way of thinking, it's like they're all thinking in silos and they don't really see. For me, there is no way you can be a good marketer if you don't even know about the like visual communication principles. You don't need to be a good graphic designer, but you need to understand the work of a designer. And I guess like I really wanted to be in a position where I can just bring all those silos together and have this overview. And
so you're in this role in Sydney, yeah. And you're trying to do this then?
So yeah, I tried to do this. Like I tried to merge a lot of different things. Like, for example, they have this idea of thinking offshore market and onshore market are different things.
And just for those who don't know, what does that mean exactly?
Oh, because so I was working for a company helping students to come to, like from Europe to come in Australia to study. And so they were like 90% of their marketing was just offshore, so in Europe. So like Italy, Spain, and France mainly. But once the student arrived in Australia, there were nothing, no follow-up, nothing, no. They really missed the point of building the community. Mm-hmm. So once I developed the French market, they built a team offshore as well. So I'm like, yeah, now I would like to actually try to do this onshore, like to develop the community.
So a student would see the advertising, mm-hmm. then they'd get interested in the role or course, they'd come across. They would consider job is done, the person has come across, I don't need to take care of them now they're here. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, it was a bit like this, and also basically each market, so Italian, Spain and French were working really independently. And so when once they arrive in Australia, Spaniards or Italian, they had completely different experience. It was like three companies within one. And I really try to create this kind of company culture that will cross around. And I actually found the marketing team was really they had the same frustration than me. So they really together we really helped to develop this. And I also help with the whole team to do the full rebrand.
Because it's you needed to get content and you needed to capture what the students were going through so you could use that as advertising for further students? Is that, but that wasn't connecting?
The idea was more because each market was kind of successful on their own, but the idea was more that to pick all the things that were successful and basically help each other, but also really merge kind of all the experience as well. So that's when an Italian from Milan is here, but this company coming to Australia and start the adventure in Australia, they find the same support in Australia that they find in Italy. But also the Spaniard student will have the same. So when they arrive in Italy, in Australia, they find the same support and they can bond with the Italian because in the end they have similar experience as well. And nice. So, yeah, I really tried to do this. So that was actually, obviously it's not just me. It was the whole team. I met a lot of amazing people that really helped to build this together.
How big was the team?
Oh, they have I think almost 200 staff around the world.
200 team members to help you do this?
No. For me, I had some, the team in Milan. So that was maybe three people in marketing that really helped me offshore. I have the marketing manager in France that help as well. And after onshore, we had a bunch of different people as well, community manager.
How long did you do this for?
5 years.
Wow. So 2013, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 2018, uh-huh. You're what happened from there?
I wanted some changes.
Yeah, cool.
I had an amazing experience. I really enjoyed my time in Sydney, but I needed something else. I needed a new challenge. I wanted also a position where my creativity will be more central to my my responsibility, where I can actually create and design. And I was tired of spending half of my salary on my rent and to be always
Sydney
stuck
rates.
In traffic. I came to Perth a couple of times because I already had some friends here and I always liked it. And I was you know what, I'm going to give it a go. And to be fully transparent, actually, my idea was just to come have a look for a couple of months and have to move somewhere else. But it's been 3 years now.
So what is it that when you first arrived here 3 months, you were looking for a role or one just came out of nowhere or what happened?
Yeah, it kind of I think that I was you know what, I'm just going to throw, when I arrived in Perth, I had enough to survive for a couple of months. I was you know what, I'm not going to put any pressure. And I think once I saw an ad that I actually really liked, I was you know what, I'm just going to send it. I didn't even do too much. And I got the job.
Oh, nice.
So
what was the job?
So the job is, that was an entrepreneur. He had a bunch of different companies, and basically he wanted someone to look after all his brands and all his websites and to have someone to help him to develop more brands when he creates more company. So this is how, and that was actually surreal because when I arrived at the interview, he actually told me, he's like, this it's not an interview, you get the job. It's just for me to explain you what the job is.
Super cool.
So that was actually awesome. And yeah, and after, so we worked, like I worked with him for a while, but also obviously there were a lot of marketing in it. And I told him that I'm super keen on all the design. I'm not keen on the marketing part, and also I can't take both. And so I asked if I can hire somebody.
I'm curious to hear what you're saying here, because when someone usually wants to hire someone to help them with their marketing, they're usually expecting design to come with marketing as a common thought process. Mm-hmm. Because a person who's like, all right, I need to make an ad, I gotta make a social media post, I gotta put the design for that social media post. Oh, that's a design process. Okay, let's make the design. Now we gotta put money behind it and boost it, and off it goes. Oh, and that needs to go to a landing page, and then blah, blah, blah. So what's your definition of breaking those two roles down, and why you think it's best to split them?
Actually, because I did both, for me there is no really clear boundary. Like, it's really blurry.
Yeah, it is.
And I think that maybe where I will put my personal boundaries, because at the end, that I guess the boundary is quite personal. And I will see that maybe if I have to put like a limit to my own skills, it would be like for copywriting, because also I'm actually a French copywriter, so I know what all the technicalities of being a copywriter. So I know all the things I'm missing in English in terms of like accuracy of grammar or accuracy of wording, because, you know, sometimes I have some relationship with words that are more personal, you know, that I will feel a word differently than people that were born in Australia, for example.
Okay.
So this is a couple of things I need to adjust. So I know my limitation in terms of English copywriting. So,
But on the design side?
And on the design side, after that, it's hard to put the. Let's say if I act as a designer, basically I'm expecting the marketing manager to come to me and say, here the text you need on the banner, here the text that we're going to have in the ad, here the landing page where they're going to end up, here the feelings I want from the banner.
Okay.
And after, this is my role to make it happen.
Right. And so he was asking you to do both roles at the time.
Yeah, I think this is what he really liked about my profile, is the fact that I can do a bit of everything. Mm. And yeah, no, it worked well. But it's just like, yeah, I was not really interested to, first it was way too much work. And like, I wanted to be able to create some space for me so I can create more and do really, instead of doing brands that were here, doing brands that are here. So I can have somebody taking care of all the technicalities of marketing, because I think that maybe marketing is a lot of, you know, market research, a lot of technical things that I know has to happen, but also it's kind of a mechanic as well.
Not your thing.
If I can avoid it.
You can do it, if you can avoid it, you would.
After, like, obviously that I, you know, each job, has, you have a technical part of it, and it's kind of mundane task that needs to happen, and I'm always, you know, like, I'm happy to do them, because, you know, for the greater good.
So you're doing this with him, you're building his brands. How long were you doing that for?
So I did this for a couple of months, and after I get to him and I said, yeah, like I would like to have somebody to support me for all the marketing tasks. And so he gave me the green light. I ran some interviews, and this is how I met Josh. So Josh is my business partner now. And so, yeah, I met Josh, and I think that, like, I interviewed him because I saw his cover letter, and it makes me laugh at the first line. I never read cover letters. But for his, like, he makes me laugh at the first line, and I was like, okay, fair enough. I'm gonna give him an interview, and we end up talking for 2 hours during the interview, and I was like, yeah, no, I think that's good.
Okay,
and
cool.
So, and I hired him. So we started, he started like a marketing manager. And yeah, at one point we worked so well together that after a couple of months, we think about just starting the company, a company together.
Right, so that was 2019.
So this was, yeah, beginning of 2019, yeah, I think so.
Oh, and then Concept On was born.
Yes.
So what was it like those first early days, getting started, choosing a location? How did that all, setting up the team? Basically,
it's all happened quite over. I think we've been incredibly lucky because we realized that we were working well together and we had like similar values, but really complementary skills. And we started, basically when we talked about this, after we approached our boss, so the serial entrepreneurs, and we were, look, we get this idea where that's basically what we're doing for you, we're doing for other people as well. And like we keep, so you become the clients. And so, and yeah, he was on board. And so basically we started with already a portfolio of clients. And so, and also because he had experience in entrepreneurship, so that was good to have this, in the team. So we started like this. And yeah, we kind of have like a, we did this for a couple of months before we actually opened to the external markets. So yeah, we officially started as independent company in November 2019. So yeah.
Very good.
So yeah, that was really exciting. And I think that was, and still actually really interesting adventure for Josh and I, because we never had a company before. We never, so that was interesting. I learned so much about myself in the past 2 years.
So what were those things you learned? Like what was something that you found being changing the hat from employee to director?
Like, the thing is, like, obviously, I'm always like the one that goes and breaks silos. So I'm always curious to see, and I'm not afraid to, like, for example, when we officially started, I started by doing like a really short training into bookkeeping because I wanted to look after the bookkeeping. Because before to actually give it to an external, I wanted to fully understand, not fully, obviously, this is too complex, but to have a good overview of this. Mm-hmm. And Josh did the same for like HR perspective, because we have similar view where, yeah, we need to understand what we don't know before we can pick the right people to delegate to. Mm-hmm. So I learned a lot about bookkeeping, definitely. After one thing that I think I learned the most is client management. Mm-hmm. Because and that's just confirmed something that I already know, that whatever job you do, the most consuming thing is to deal with people. It can be employees, employers, clients, anyone. Mm-hmm. That is the most challenging things. And this is not something that you've been taught.
No, like when you're trying to get a job, right, and you're the employee kind of role, uh-huh. you have to impress usually just one, maybe two people at most.
Yeah.
Just maybe one or two. Because at that point you're like, okay, this is gonna be my boss or this is gonna be my manager, and the manager talks to my boss, and so I gotta make sure those two are happy for them to take me on so they'll pay me my salary. And if I achieve that, I'm done for the year. I'm done. I just got to do my job, keep my head down, make sure I fit in well with the culture. That's kind of it. But when you're the director, you're like, okay, I have to make sure any stakeholders are happy. I got to make sure my team's happy. Then I got to make sure the people who are paying me for different contracts are happy. So like, okay, your scope of people goes to about 30 people to try to keep it all. Is that what you're like experiencing in the various change?
That you need to make everyone's happy. And also, you know, after, for me, the key is always the same, like the key. Don't know if I'm really successful at this, but my step one is always the same, just listen. First, I try to listen. I try to, to understand what people want, so I can after, because also, the hardest, especially for clients, is managing expectations. Because obviously, if you say, oh yeah, my products are amazing, the expectation will be really high. And especially when we're talking about design, it's not something that you can actually measure. You don't have super clear KPI that, if you create an ad, you put the ad out, you receive leads, you can directly measure it. But when we're talking about design, this is a long-term achievement. And also that most of the people, they have this false idea about design, that they mix visual communication and aesthetic. That you don't need a design to be a piece of art to work. When you think about Nike, the branding is brilliant. It's just a tick. This is not a piece, it's not a complex design or anything. But it's efficient because it's simple. And because it's plain, and because it's really consistent and coherent, it doesn't appear really technical, but is it actually highly technical? And I think that people, they think that to be technical, it needs to appear technical. You know what I mean? So I guess this is where I find the most challenging to communicate with the clients. And that also,
when you say trying to communicate this, because you've got experience knowing what it is makes good design. Mm-hmm. So you have someone that will come in to you guys. Now, before we even go there, I really would love to know for those who are wanting through. Now, normally we talk about products and trying to get your first sales, but because you're so service based, we'll just explore that avenue for a bit. Yep. Your entrepreneur guy who was saying, all right, cool, you guys want to go solo. Mm-hmm. I'll pay you your rates, whatever you want to do. That sounds like it'll work for me. So then he runs that through. Then you've got bandwidth that you want to start exploring outside of that group. What was it that you did to start getting attraction to you guys, to choose you guys over others in the marketplace? What was your steps that you guys took?
So it took us, and we're still actually working on this, but maybe it took us six to 12 months to really own how to present our service. Because I think also the big difference, I haven't met any other branding agency doing things the way we do. I met a lot of other entrepreneurs that have similar approach for their own expertise, but in branding, because how I see branding and the reason why I created Concept On as well is I think that people with brilliant idea deserve to shine. And that, let's say, if you have a brilliant idea about a book, that your expertise is being a writer. Therefore, I don't expect you to know how to design your book cover, how to design your website where you're going to be selling your book. So this is my job. This is how I can help you. And I guess that the idea behind Concept On, it's you have this great idea within you, and my job is to put it out. So for me, branding is less of a construction and more of a revelation.
But how did you get the person who was the book person to talk to you? That part started?
So we started, first we started with a bunch of online campaigns. Didn't work really well because the number one client that we don't want to have is the guy that came and said, no, I just want the logo.
That was that pretty much everybody.
Yeah, and I guess also we realized that our sale process, I don't really like calling it like this, but our sale process is actually an educational journey. So basically we don't sell our product, we explain what branding is. And once people, they actually understand what branding is, they can ask us some question if we can help them. And after at this point, we can help to build a plan, and after they can decide to go with us or not. But basically, at the beginning, we just explain them what branding is.
It's hard in the beginning because when you're at the beginning, revenue's not the strongest. So you kind of just got to sell to bring money in to pay the electricity, pay the lease, pay yourselves something. So was it possible for you to be selective at that stage, or was it like someone said yes, you guys went with everyone that said yes in the beginning?
But actually, this is why I said that I think we were extremely fortunate, because we started with already a portfolio of like 5 or 6 companies that were asking us regular jobs from like the previous job that now was actually our business partner as well and client. So he was actually giving us already like a steady amount of work. So this is why we had the luxury, and I think this is a huge luxury as a younger business, to actually have some incomes where we, Josh and I, can actually brainstorm and find some new pipes, like how to open new pipes.
This is a really unique situation you're in, where most people who want to go out alone, that's bloody scary, because they're technically saying to their employer, hey, I'm going to leave you, but I'm going to come straight back in a different way. How did that conversation go? Was it awkward? Was it a bit scary? Or how did you take it?
I think that it's always been the plan. The plan was always to actually look after all his brands and create brands on his own. So it's always been the plan.
It was always the plan to do this?
It's always been the plan, except that the plan will be like... the plan was that this entrepreneur to be just the sole owner of this business, and I will be just the director. And basically we change a bit by saying like, you know what, we believe in this so much that Josh and I, we actually coming at co-director, but also we put our skin in the game, you know.
That's the conversation.
That was the conversation, yeah. That basically now we are like, you know, we're in this all together.
And he was... Cool.
Yeah, like we like with Josh, we talk a lot about this, and first if we were willing to do this, and we had this whole plan, and we have like this whole forecast for the next 12 months and all of that. So we really give it a lot of thoughts, and we actually present this like in a really nice presentation because I only know how to do this like this.
Okay, fair enough. So it went really well, conversations went strong.
Yeah.
And then you guys are off, and then you're working on different education processes in your sales, sales formats, I guess?
Yeah, like funnel. After it's just one thing we realize, and I think this is something that is really purse market, that in the end that all our digital campaign didn't really work out. We got a couple of things, but I think not. What worked the most was like the word of mouth.
Why did it not work out? Was it the way it was written, or was it the format of the?
I think it's like we didn't find the right formula to get rid of the not relevant leads. So we did get leads from this, but not the kind of leads we wanted. And we didn't find the right formula. But in the meantime, we realized that the word of mouth worked brilliantly. We realized that when Josh and I, we were going to events and talking to people, it worked really well as well. So because we were limited in our resources, we based more effort on networking and connect with people. And so this is what we've been doing a lot in the past year, and it worked amazingly for us.
So inbound marketing was a lot stronger than outbound, like ads and the like.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, wow.
Like developing network, developing relationship. I still think this is something that is really, it works in Perth. Because Perth is, and this is one thing I actually like about Perth, is Perth is it's a big city and a town city. So you still have all the things from a big city, but also all the kind of the mentality of a small town. It's all about connection. And at the end also that's like, if you have somebody that come to you because one of their friends recommended you, you already enter the conversation in a strong position, you know. It's the same thing that if you scroll on Facebook and you have a lot of ads say like this page, but if you have, oh, your best mate likes this page, you're more likely to actually stop for 2 seconds and consider liking the page.
Right.
Because you know that you're somebody you trust already voucher? Yeah,
vouchers for
yeah,
you.
Vouchers, yeah. Sorry if I do some mistakes. Okay.
So you've been going along with this process since 2019, 2020, we're in 2021. Yeah. It's October now. This year's almost over. So in that approach, like, has it been interesting building the team? And so when did you recognize, like, when you needed to expand yourself? And because how long were you and Josh going, you and Josh, before it became you and Josh and someone else?
So we actually talked a lot when we realized that, yeah, like, we needed to expand the team. With Josh, we talked a lot. Like, whatever we need to do a big decision, we talked a lot, which we think that at the beginning was maybe taking too much time, but I think it's actually a strength because we can bounce the ideas. And we both, like, Josh and I, we both, like, think twice and cut once. Is it the right thing? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so,
measure,
you know,
twice, cut once.
Yeah, measure twice, yeah. Thank you.
And fashion statement, that one.
So, yeah, like, so we do this a lot. After, the problem is because we saw measure twice that, you know, it really pushed the time we're actually cutting. So we think a lot about, at the beginning when we were thinking expanding, was like, where is the less risk? So we thought about just getting a couple of entrepreneurs, which we tried, but we realized that actually that was a lot of work to look after them and to train, to look after them, to brief. And we really wanted to just, you know, to transmit our culture, because this is something that we really wanted. We really wanted to empower anyone that is working with us. And it's actually taking a lot of our time to do this, especially with people that are, you know, all around the place and that not necessarily with us in the office. So after we...
So you went remote people initially?
Yeah, like people we knew.
Okay.
So like we tried like people we already knew, so we already have a relationship. But yeah, like we realized it was a lot of... we didn't have enough time to really...
Were these people that were like you had work and you needed someone to help you complete the work? Or was this like... people would help you sell more, or was this people would help you with skills that you didn't
have? It was more on the tools. So we had like, essentially we tried with copywriters. So, you know, because when you need to do like a full website, so you have like a bunch of copywriting. So we tried this, like developing copywriting for like some ads or brochures, all of this. But after also we realized that also one skill is not
really
enough. Yeah, because basically if you have one person for the copywriting, one person for like set up the actual campaign, it's actually not only you have to brief two people instead of one, but also you have to make them work together, you have to supervise both. So after we tried something different, so basically we decided to explore, like to hire like a mini Josh and a mini me, like somebody that share my skills and somebody that shares Josh's skills.
So you double down on your own skills instead?
Yeah,
okay.
And see how it goes. And that we thought a lot about this, because obviously getting two new people on board, that's a lot.
Yeah,
and
you got new salaries, super. You gotta make sure the team fits.
And I guess like around this point we had like a person of a network that got to us and say, oh yeah, Manis is looking for she's a designer, she just finished cutting. And I had a look at her portfolio and I was actually really impressed. For like a 20-ish years old, like she was really thorough, she was really, attention to details were really high. And with Josh we were like, yeah, you know what, we've been talking about this for a while now, I think that, you know, if we have to take the risk, like this is the leap of faith, I guess.
Nice.
Like, so, So yeah, we did it. Like we interview her, we liked her, and we offer her spots. So yeah, and she's been working with us since. And really shortly after this, we advertised for somebody, so more like marketing, copywriting, social media. And we also, like in our job description, like we really push people to think outside of the box. So we really push people, like we don't ask cover letters. We basically were asking like, do whatever you want to do to impress us. And actually 80% of the people, they still do a basic cover letter. And I'm not interested by this. And after we received this application from Dylan, that and his cover letter was a blog article, like 7 reasons why you should hire me, the 6th one's gonna blow your mind. And that was hilarious. That's actually, wow. Like I read it all. That is the first time I read all.
You can only get away with this in a designing, marketing type of industry.
Yeah.
In accounting or logistics or anything. Oh, that's not many people. Well, mind you, you're looking for creativity, right? You're looking for.
I'm looking for looking an
attitude.
You're
looking for extension. Yeah, you're looking for
that
kind of approach. And that's because that's what you and Josh are like, right? Like that's your style.
I because I think that Josh can teach anyone to be a good copywriter. I can teach anyone to be a good designer. One thing we can't teach them is to be curious, to have the attention to details, to be out there, to think outside of the box. So this is what we were focused on when we're looking for somebody.
I agree with you 100% in this phrase, because it's a lot easier to teach a skill than it is to teach an attitude or a mindset.
Exactly.
It's bloody hard. So like, if you bring someone into the team that's got the wrong mindset, it can really stifle you guys, stifle any team for a while until either they go or they change. And sometimes the change never comes, sadly.
Yeah. And I think that also that's kind of, if you want to create like a really healthy and productive ecosystem, you need that like a team that sing the same song. So for example, like we are really like, we don't micromanage. And for me also that I give you objectives, whether you take road 1, 2, or 3, I actually don't care as long as you you deliver. And so like, even if for me personally, I would prefer road 1, if you personally prefer road 3, go for it. It's the destination that matters.
Right.
And
have you ever hired anyone and realized, whoa, I made a big mistake? Gotta cut them out?
Yeah, we had this experience.
You don't have to tell the person's name, but
no.
I just wanna hear how it went.
But like, that was, like, I wouldn't say that was a big mistake. Like, obviously that's a decision that cost a lot.
But what happened? Did the person just impress and then?
I think it's just that, I guess like, it was actually, somehow I'm glad it happens because I learned a lot as a manager. And as a business owner, I learned a lot. And it's just I realized that this person needed a managing style that we couldn't offer.
So what was it like for those to learn the same lesson you have experienced so they don't make the same mistake? Did they come with something that was really interesting as a resume? Obviously, they didn't have a cover letter, probably.
for which one? Sorry?
For the one that didn't. Yeah. Cut the mustard.
So I think it went well, and I think also that was a developer. So I do think developer, they have a different mindset. So, and I think it's just that obviously, because we're all about trying to empower our staff. Like basically when I hired Georgia, my designer, I hired her by saying like, I want you to make me irrelevant. I want you to take my spot. So this is how far I want you, and I'm going to give you everything for you to take my spot, and as a creative director. And this is what I tried to do with the programmer, but also I realized that I had no idea what programming was. And it's just like we had this huge contract that was basically developing a whole like online platform, and I put him in charge of this. And I was like, yeah, this is your moment to shine. So basically, here the requirement from the client. You come back to me with a plan, with a timeline, with a budget. And so, and I really try to help him to develop all of this, and alongside with Joshua as well. And like we develop all of this, develop the plan and everything. And a couple of weeks before we're supposed to deliver, we realized that the work haven't been done. Like he was really, really behind. And basically we're trying to understand why you just, and
why was the work behind?
Why you didn't come, like we were checking on him regularly. We were asking if he needed some help and how things were going, and never asked for help or anything. And yeah, like we tried to figure out that how, what went wrong, but also we really tried to understand how as managers we felt, because this is the first thing with Josh we actually look into. It's like, we are the managers here. We failed, how we failed. So we really tried to understand how we failed him, but also we wanted him to reflect that how we failed the project. And we realized that actually this conversation, this is where we realized that the communication was not not constructive at all. And because like we were really, you know, you do like whatever you need, we're not gonna check on the micromanaging. And we realized that actually now he needed to be micromanaged. And we had to end up the project by just micromanaging. And that was actually a huge amount of my time. And yeah, like, and we really tried to do everything to make it work. But I guess it's just, we needed different things.
It's hard with development because development is very focused. Like it's effectively accounting. It's effectively making sure that the, you know, methods are correct. You gotta make sure that whatever the code algorithms are being written, like they gotta go through thorough testing. If it's a software program, but if it's like, you know, doing a brochure website or, you know, stuff like that, whatever, like, yeah, that stuff's easy. But for those who try to manage, like I really struggled myself when we were building a Ruby platform. And we had to bring developers into the team. Me not knowing the skill of how to write Ruby code back then was really difficult to manage someone, because they could just bullshit their way through a role and I would not know any different. Until I started having to learn how to write Ruby myself and then understanding some basic things around what code is. I didn't have to be a master at coding or any, didn't even have to be a really good coder. I just knew. And if I knew the terminologies that they would state, the way they spoke, it makes it easier to recognize if the person's full of shit and trying to be a rock star and just get, you know, the 100K salary base, or if they're literally genuine and know what they're talking about and the aspirations of what. Because in design, when you really know a good design, you're like, that guy's got it.
Yeah,
that
you know,
girl's
I could pick
it. But then when you don't have the skill, it's like, I like the person, but I don't know if the person's got the technical skill to bring this team to the next point. And yeah, I've been burnt a couple of times.
Yeah, I think that's, and because I always try to assume, I'm a pessimistic, like I'm really pessimistic, and I try to change that. So I really try not to assume the worst from people. So I do think that this employee didn't mean bad. I think he was, He just overwhelmed himself. He didn't ask for help, and after he just took all the critique really personally, and he didn't try to change and to evolve. Sorry, not to change, because we didn't ask him to change. We asked him to evolve. And also, I think there was like other things that came on the picture. You know, that the client like. That was a really complex project, and I think the clients changed their mind a couple of times as well. So that was hard for us to keep the timeline.
That is hard.
So, and I think that was a first project like this. But at the end, you know what? That was a really big and complex project. We have this problem with the employee. We managed to deliver.
Did they still expect you to stick to the timeline, even though they willingly knew they made changes to the?
I think they didn't understand the amount of, and also I think that something I reflect later on with is that I was the one managing directly with the client. So I was like the one in between, and I realized that some changes they were asking, I didn't exactly know what it means as the developer. So even if I really try to, okay, let me talk to my developer and go back to you, and it's like, yeah, like they actually instead of this, they want this. And they're like, yeah, okay, change everything, I need two extra months. And after a while, I go back to the client and say, oh, you know what, we were supposed to deliver next week, actually we need three extra months, you know, because of those changes. So that was hard. I think that now I'm, when I reflect on this, if I had to redo this, the first thing I would have done, I would have actually went with the client and say, you know what, I'm not going to take any of this until we sit down and we have a proper plan that we stick to. And I think this is what we should have done. Because at the beginning, when we've been received the brief, and after we have like a lot of changes that come really quickly, I realized that that was still a work in progress.
This is really hard, and this is hard for a lot of businesses, because if you're making a product or you're making a software system or you're just making whatever it is, like what you know at the starting line is as much as you know. Mm-hmm. And then you take a couple of steps into a process and you've tested some things or you've seen things that are better than the original plan. It's very difficult to ignore or not apply those things, because you didn't know that. If you knew it at the beginning, at the starting line, yeah, you would have done it. But because you're already on the process, yeah. They're like, oh, it's the same in our own businesses and your business too. Like if you did a plan based on what you knew in 2018 for all the stuff that you've learned now since 2020, would the plan still be the same? I would assume no, because you would say, oh, no, okay, so we know that in 5 months we're going to need this, so we need to make sure this is here at the beginning. It's really difficult.
Yeah.
And this is the thing where a lot of people will get powerless. Oh my God, my English is going. Where they would get paralyzed in actually just starting because they think they've got to be perfect. But I think it's okay to not have it. And something that I only just learned a little while ago is because we don't do projects, but sometimes we have to do an API integration to a website or a marketplace that is not really an e-commerce platform, but they're producing orders on that platform. So one of it's like Zoho, and we had to then scope out what's this work going to be, how many hours is it going to take to get the integration completed, and then give them a number. And we gave them a number, and then we had like, oh, by the way, even though we need this integration, we got to make sure this piece of information is added to it so we can ship that as well with the arrangement, because the product had a serial number. So this particular business had a medical device that was technically the same medical device, but they had a subscription model, and the subscription model had three different tiers. So each tier would release a certain amount of functions on the program on the device. And the serial number would connect with the tier, which would then state to their team which one it goes through. And we had to record the serial number of each piece and send that serial number to the platform that they wanted to integrate into in Zoho. And my thought process is like, bitch, we just want to fulfill and send this out and say, right. But then we're like, well, if we make their business better, it makes our business better at the same time. It's gonna cost money, it's gonna take time, blah, blah. And so we had to then think about, all right, we have, how much is this thing gonna cost? How much to learn this new platform to figure out how the function works and apply it? And then like after at the beginning we figured, okay, we just need to do this. But then we finished the integration, and then there's like two other things that they needed along the way because their business model changed, which we didn't foresee. And we're like, why didn't you know? Like, of course they didn't know, because that person got directed by another manager in Singapore to tell him, oh, don't forget to do this. We need to do this now because we've spoken to our board and we think this is a good way to go. And then he's like, I just gotta do it, man. And so we're like, okay, fine. We'll stick it in with the price we assert. And then after they release this, subscription model and everything else, it didn't go so well. The whole thing flopped. So they're like, okay, that whole integration thing we did, we don't need it anymore. We need to do it on this one.
Yeah, I guess. But also, yeah, it's part of the game, I guess. But yeah. I think one thing that also I learned a lot, and you know, when we were talking about managing client expectations, you have some clients that want you to think, and some clients that want you to do.
Yes, you do.
And I think that it's once the client wants you to do, you need to make them accountable if we didn't think. Because if the client wants me to think and I didn't forecast something, like I'm more than happy to take the responsibility because the responsibility is on me. If the client asks me to do and I didn't foresee, that's not on me. So like, and I always, like, obviously if I see that the ship is going straight to the iceberg, I'm not gonna say, no, just ask me to take care of the ship, not to look forward. What's of course, I'm gonna go and I'm gonna, you know, say, look, like I noticed this and this and this, after it's your call, obviously, but my recommendation would be to do this. And after it's completely whatever they decide, one, they know whatever they decide, like, yeah, they're the clients.
Let them learn that lesson.
Yeah, but so, yeah, this is something, but I think the most dangerous clients, not dangerous, but the most, like what can potentially go the wrongest is that clients that ask you to do, but expect you to think as well. But it doesn't give you the room to think.
You mean like somebody says, hey, look, Charlotte, I need this website.
Yeah.
I'll see you next week. Like this kind of thing?
I think it's more that, okay, I need a website. It's like, okay, I can do, like if you want your website in the time frame, I can do this. Like this. No. I want you to do this, like this. It's like, okay, but it's gonna take more time. And after when you do it and you take more time, it's like, what is taking so much time? It's like, because you decided to go the long way. And it's like, if you wanted to do my way, and like this is, that would be my recommendation. Or actually something like, lately we had a client that we did the whole website. And so when we do the copy on the website, we try to, like, we aim to find the right balance between being SEO friendly and being user friendly. So we have all the keywords, but also it's really smooth and really organized for any viewer to read the content. And so we build the whole website with this in mind. And the client get back and like, no, let's change the whole copy. This is the copy we want. That they butcher our work. Like that was like a massacre. But
don't you hate it when it's like you put all this work into something, you're like, it's made for this reason. They're like, nah, don't like it.
But after
back
like,
to the drawing board.
We told them, like when they asked to change, like we first did like for free an audit. It's like, okay, we reviewed the whole copy. This is all the things that we think are not good for the copy. But if you want us to keep going with this, let's go with this. And they're like, yeah, no, change the copy. And they get back to us a couple of weeks ago. It's like, oh, do you think we can make the copy more SEO friendly? And I'm like,
hang on a second.
SEO friendly?
You already did it SEO friendly. Then they didn't like it. Now they want to go back.
No, they wanted to go back. And now they, and also, like I tried to explain, it's like, it's not like we can just add some keywords. It's the copy is about the overview. So you need to have a constant, like the same tone, the same voice everywhere, but also, you know, the organization. It's like basically each fold on your website it's leading to the next one. It makes you scroll down. So each line has to give you the envy to read the next one.
So I'm curious now. So was this a product?
Yeah, kind of.
So when you're doing the copy for products, because usually when on an e-commerce website, you'll have usually a grid layout of the products on the shopping page, and they gotta find something that they like. And then they click on a specific one, and the common format is images on the right, a little gallery of images on the right, price tag, title, subtitle, text, price tag, options. And then below that, it's either maybe a further description or other other products like that or testimonials. Mm-hmm. That's your standard product layout that I see. So are you like writing a copy part in the description section, trying to boost that and the images in that? Is that like a thing
so
to work on?
The thing is,
or was it more blog content stuff?
I'm gonna give you, but maybe for me it's common sense, so I don't know if it's, but for the key for a website is you think it's each page as a funnel. So each page you need to think, it's like, what is the, like the bottom of the funnel is what is the action I want the user to be doing at the end. So most of the time, like in most of the website is contact me. Or for e-commerce, it would be like if we're talking about the page for one product, is the like buy the product basically. So this is the first thing you define. Then you need to build your funnel. First, you need to grab the attention. So you need a hook. Most of the time you need to appeal to more emotional brain. Then you go down the path and basically you explain that how, like if we take like a product, like how this product is actually beneficial for you. So like, let's say if we're talking about a big mug, you're not gonna say, oh, you need a big mug. You're gonna start by saying like, with this big mug, you don't have to refill every 2 hours. Like you have your tea for the whole morning.
That's why I use it.
So you're gonna actually save time.
Mm.
Because you know, you come, you do your tea in the morning and you just set up for the whole morning.
Yes.
So you have more time to be productive at work. You have more time to do what you want to do. Mm. So you start by saying this and all the benefits from this. And after slowly you come to more technical parts. Like, yeah, that's actually a really cool mug that is like kind of Star Wars reference. So not only you will save time, but you will also look cool. And it's actually, you know, you have the handle that has really handy to hold, and therefore, bye. And after also that, maybe it's a bit like just making this up, because after, in order to create this funnel, you also need to be aware of what the brand is and what kind of things you want the, you know, what kind of values the brand wants to highlight, because obviously it will really define how you organize all the flow. And obviously the copy and the imagery and the design and the experience are to work hand by hand. And I think also this is why with Josh we work so well, is because so he was like, he's more copy focused and I'm more that visual communication focus. But we also understand that both had to work hand in hand. And this is why we build, because at the end, this is what branding is. It's like making everything work hand in hand.
Yeah. Normally I would ask you a question like, to close up a call to action, but you kind of hit it on the head there. Like what you said was perfect. I know you've got to go to your next meeting, so I'm not going to take up any more time of this amazing woman I concept on. So again, Charlotte, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story
and
about what you've
me.
Been doing and what's and how it's like being able to really nut down the actual conversion process in a real quick, stylish manner. But thanks so much. If you want to hear more about this, check it out on our YouTube channel as well. If you want to check out Concept On, you can find them at
conceptone.com.au
or
on Instagram, Get Turned Online, and on Facebook as well.
Very good. Take care. See you later. This episode with Charlotte and I has been a really, really nice one. And the next one we've got coming up for you is Natalie and myself going through e-commerce from the early days of e-commerce right through to what is the most important strategies in marketing today. Check it out. It'll be really great, and have a great day.